Hi.
Hi.
Hi, honey.
I'm Andy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I brought flip cards. The reason I did is because I'm really nervous. I'll put that right up there now. So I want to start this out by saying, just because I'm saying it doesn't mean to the new people that it's necessarily the book as it's written. It's how it worked out in my world. And it's been messy at times. So I would suggest, from my experience, I think it was Ben Franklin that said, a bright man learns from the experience of others, a bright man learns from his own experience, and a brilliant man learns from experience of others. The experience in the book has been the best experience, because that's what I have to go back to after I've kicked my own ass, usually. I don't know that my body matters that much other than to me. Suffice to say that it was a rendering of my ego to the point where I actually was willing to let God do something with me. I'm going to talk about God. If it offends anybody, change the word to Allah, Yahweh, Creator, Doorknob, I don't care. But I am God, and that's okay. And I respect anybody else's belief, if it works. The God I came into this program with wasn't kind, wasn't loving, wasn't an understanding that worked for me. And I have struggled with it for years. I would say I've struggled with it for decades. I've had to unteach some teachings that I've been taught. Unlearning stuff's harder than learning. For the record, I didn't do it right the first time, but I chose to not take alcohol or mind-altering drugs for 10,779 days. And those are single days. When I first got here, I looked at people who had a week and wondered how they did it. And I tried to get with those people. And then the people that had a month, sometimes they let me tag along. I remember going to one of my first meetings, and everybody went to coffee afterwards, and they said, "Do you want to come?" And I went, "Yeah, that'd be awesome." Thinking I can remember the last time I was invited to the bar for anybody with anybody. Nobody really wanted to be around me that much. So I went to coffee. Well, and then I went to the meeting the next night, and apparently y'all assumed that I was just going to tag along and go to coffee because nobody invited me. And I thought, oh, I said something, mm-hmm. and y'all don't like me. And I was crushed. I was fragile. I urge you to involve the newcomer as best you can. So what I wanted to talk about wasn't what happened, what it's like, and what it's like now. I wanted to talk about old-timerism. And how it affects me in my life today. And how close to relapse I really am at times. I see and hear a lot of people with really shiny, happy stories all the time, and I gotta wonder, am I just broken that much? And or are y'all blowing smoke up your own derriere? So here's what I think old-timerism is. That I've seen it all before. That nothing is new for me to learn. that I have contempt prior to an investigation before you ever open your mouth. So, you know, I know it all. I've been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. And with that contempt, though, I get to miss the miracles that people share in meetings. I get to miss the miracles that I see in the world. And there are many. If you're not seeing them, you're not looking. When I'm around an old-timer, or a newcomer who's an old-timer, I remember this man vividly. I met him down at a conference down south, and he had had 21 years. And this is when I had 21 years. And he was 6 months sober, and had been a prominent banker, and, you know, very successful, had a wife, family, grown up, college kids. The American dream, I mean, and he relapsed. And he was the man I glommed onto that weekend. I wanted inside his head. I wanted to know why he was there, because I didn't want to be there. I was scared, because I knew what was going on in my head. I knew what was going on in my life, the stuff I don't share in meetings. And he told me, flat out, he told me a story. The sad part of that was, he opened Pandora's box and couldn't close it. I watched the man drink himself to death. Over the course of a year, he passed. And you know, it was sad, because he was a nice guy. Not that assholes don't deserve recovery, too. You guys invited a biker to speak. I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep it clean. So, here's what happens. You know, my relapse starts well before I ever think about really picking up a drink. Way before. And it usually starts with when I wake up in the morning and I don't have time to talk to my higher power before I shower. And I don't take the time on the way to work to talk to my higher power. And my co-worker pisses me off and I let him have it. You know, and then I go home and I'm stewing on what he said, because what's he know? This kind of goes back to that contempt prior to investigation and closed-mindedness. I stop serving others. I'll go to the meeting. I don't need to get clean up. I don't need to make coffee. Somebody else will do it. Pretty soon I stop going to the meetings. And, you know, I stop returning friends' phone calls. And I stop liking the guy in the mirror. And I start hurting. You know, these things happen months before hopefully months before my relapse is full bloom. But these are all things that I progress into. And then I start looking for things to fill that, you know, that void, that pain that I'm feeling. Whether it be food, I'm a good cook. Whether it be music that doesn't necessarily drive me to the place that I need to be. Whether it be women. And whatever it is that can take me away from the feeling I don't want to feel. And that's really where my relapse starts really blooming. Because I find each one of those things is just not quite enough. That's my disease. My disease is just not quite enough. I want more. So I've stopped liking the guy in the mirror, and now I'm doing things to relieve my pain. And many times I've done those things at the sake of others. I'm embarrassed to say, and I'm not going to do my whole 10th step or my whole fifth step with you, but I'm embarrassed to say that with decades clean, to fill a void, I've behaved so, it's repulsive to me, that, you know, I hooked up with a friend who I'd had for 25 years, who was in relapse and drinking, and we seduced each other, and the result was, I knew better. I knew from the start to the finish I knew better, but I was selfish enough to want the feeling of immediate, right now, somebody holding me. I don't have that friend anymore. I can't be of help to her anymore. I removed myself from that. And when I tried to make my amends, she wasn't ready to hear. I hope she'll reach the point where I can make amends. But you know, these are all things that I've done that I don't talk about in meetings on a daily basis when everybody says, how's it going, Andy? Yeah, not so much. But they're all things that are going to take me to my next drink. And you know, there are people there that are suffering just like me, that feel that same pain, that have that drink in their hand, that are more than willing to buy me a drink, because we all love lower companions. And they buy me a drink, and then the drink buys me. And it's all over then. The only way I found to stop that cycle from happening was and I can't, it's a choice, up until I take that first drink, I can choose to stop it. And it starts with me, you know, dropping to my knees. I don't drop to my knees because I think my God wants me to bow before him. I drop to my knees because I think I need to render myself to a point where I can let God enter me. Because my ego is too big. I got to remove the pride first. And then whenever I say, you know, I turn my will and my life over to the care of a power greater than myself, we all give that lip service. Do you? Do I? Because when I do that, then I got to listen to him. I got to follow his directions. That sucks sometimes. You want me to be honest? Yeah. You know, sometimes that's uncomfortable. I don't believe that service work should stop in the meetings in the rooms either. I did a lot of damage out in the community. I turned a lot of kids out of crap that they never should have had. I did a lot of things to people, theft and whatnot, to supply my alcoholism. And there's a lot of ways that I can do service work outside of myself. It doesn't even have to deal with a drama. I mow my neighbor's lawn. I ask her, please don't give me anything. Just give me a glass of water. And she's tickled pink. And I am too. It takes 15 minutes of my life once a week. And I've gotten to know this woman, and I have a relation with her now. And, you know, I care about her. And she cares about me. I don't have a mom to spoil anymore. So she's kind of, you know, taken that place in a small way. When I get out of me, then, you know, God does amazing things for me. And there are places that I have not been able to get out of my own way. Richard Allen Pollock passed away in 1982 of a motorcycle wreck. The timeline's fuzzy, but he left my house. I was the last person to see him, and he left my house in bed. His mother treated me like I was her third son. And I did a lot of drinking over that guilt. Because I knew in my heart of hearts that I probably fed him the poison that influenced him enough to kill him. I didn't pull the trigger, but, you know, I gave him the gun. I lived with that for a long time, and I brought it into the program, and I had a sponsor who said, you know what, I'm working you through the steps, and you keep saying, I don't know what to do. He said, pray. You don't know how to make amends to this woman because you feel it will hurt her, and you know, she will lose not only the son she lost, but she will lose you as well. But just pray about it. Pray to do something. Pray for God to perform a miracle for you. And I did. And I did that for like 2 weeks straight. And about 3 weeks later, I ran into Carol, this young man's mom, in the store. And every time I'd run into her after this accident, I could tell you what her shoes looked like. I couldn't tell you what color her eyes were anymore. But I could tell you what her shoes looked like. And she had some nice shoes on that day. And she had heard that I'd gotten into the program. And she proceeded to tell me how proud she was of me. And it crushed me. I felt that day. And I left there, and I was pissed at God. And he and I had a talk. I did the talking. He listened. He's got broad shoulders. He can take everything I can dish to him. I proceeded to go home, my arrogant self, my ego all puffed up. Because my ego puffs up with false pride, not with real pride. So I go home, and I'm stewing, and life sucks, and my phone rings. Now, a couple of miracles happened in recovery that I lived somewhere long enough to get a phone number and keep it. And this was back in the day when we had home phones and phone books. So she knew a number to call me at. And I answered the phone, and it was Carol. She said, Andy, you know, I remarried, right? And I said, yeah, I know. She said, well, my stepson's up from California. And he came up here because he's all strung out on meth. And he doesn't know how to get clean. And I know that you had some experience with drugs as well, and I was wondering if you could come talk to him. I said, I'll be right up, Carol. And I came up and I 12-stepped this kid, took him to a meeting. I have no idea if he got recovery, if I planted a seed, but I know my God was big enough to give me some relief. The only problem with that is I can forgive lots of people outside my world. The person I have the most trouble forgiving is myself. And I couldn't do it. And even though I tried working steps real diligently on it, I couldn't do it. So this is how big my God is. This is a few years later. I'm asked to speak at a meeting, Port Angeles. I go and I speak and I tell this story. And one of the things that I mentioned was I was the third son. Carol had two boys. One was my best friend. Rick was his little brother. And I did the same prayer about Ron. I didn't know how to make amends to him either. But I never got the opportunity because Ron went away to Iraq for the war. And I didn't know how to get a hold of him. So I was telling the story to me. And I told it and got done speaking and went on about my way. And about 8 months later, I get a text on Facebook that my friend Ron had passed away. And I got on my Facebook account, and I was pretty vague, and I just wrote, you know, boys and girls, if you have an amends to make, don't put it off, because eventually it may be too late. and his widow saw the text, and we all went to school together. And Tracy got a hold of me and said, I need to talk to you. So we met for coffee. She explained that Ron had been back stateside for a while, had got himself a DUI here in Squamish, and had been forced to go to some meetings, one of which was a speaker's meeting at Port Angeles. That hit me like a load of bricks. Hit him like a load of bricks, too. But she said, you know, he struggled with that for 3 days. And he finally came to me, because they had divorced, but they were still good friends. She said, he came to me and said, look at this. I got the talk screen from my mom. He said, I didn't tell her why, but I just needed to see it. And Rick wasn't high on coke when he wrecked. He wasn't drunk. So he'd gone home and showered and whatnot, and then left and wasn't all lit up. And then he did something, and I didn't know about this until after he passed, but he had his big book, and he passed, he drank himself to death. The disease got him. I wished he'd call me. But he wrote a note and left it in his big book. And it said, I absolve Andy Kenyon of any wrongdoing with my brother's death. It was strictly by his own hand. And I hope he doesn't feel guilt over it. And that's how big my God is. Because I couldn't let go of that. And I don't want to forget it either. Because I was the guy, Mother, you warned you about. I was the guy that sold stuff that shouldn't be sold. That did stuff that shouldn't be sold. And I drank and drove on a regular basis. My justification was I handled it better than you, and I could drive you home after we got trashed. So, here I am today. I was asked to speak. I had no idea what I wanted to say. But I knew this whole relapse thing was gnawing at me. Because I've seen some of my friends recently really struggling with it. And there's a choice. We can all, if we find ourselves, if I've hit any nerve in any one of you, you got a choice right now. You haven't picked up that bottle. You can do something different. It's a choice. So that's what I wanted my message to be. I don't know how long I was supposed to go. But I think I'm about there. I do love this program. It has saved my life. And you know, I'm no spiritual giant. But I had to come to the terms with some of the things that I've done in my fourth step and my fifth step that my God has to be forgiving as well. Because he wouldn't have blessed me with the desire to stay clean more than the desire to drink. He wouldn't have taken away my obsessive compulsive yeah, I was driven. Brought me this far to not bless me all the way. Why would anybody do that? So I just have to have faith. And I want to thank y'all for letting me speak. And bless your day. Thanks.
I saw you when you were a newcomer.
Yeah. Wait. Let's have another hand for Andy. All right. Wow, that was powerful.
I have to turn this thing off.
Turn it off.
Stop.